You're listening to the Talking Forest podcast with your host, Kendra Burns. In today's world, it's important to communicate your story online, and Kendra can help you by diving into social media and providing you with free tips and insights on how to build your organic social media following and shine online. Having been raised low income, first in her family to go to college, and a proud international military spouse, Kendra develops creative media content across many social media platforms from anywhere in the world. Her inspiration comes from the people who give her hope and believe in her so she can believe in you. Follow the Talking Forest podcast today to see how she lives the dream of a traveling virtual entrepreneur and get your tech tips as we keep up with the latest on social media.
Hi, and welcome to the Talking Forest podcast. This is your host, Kendra Burns. And I'm very excited to do a series that I did last year with Oregon Women in Timber. We're excited to interview Quinn Allen, and I'm going to introduce Quinn, and then we're going to go into the questions and see everything about Quinn and the amazing things she's been doing in Oregon. So Quinn is a recent graduate of Southwestern Oregon Community College with a certification in forest technology. She's currently working for the Coquille Watershed Association as a seasonal noxious weeds technician. She has also been hired as a timber cruiser for a timber consulting company and has begun training to start full-time after her season ends at the watershed, which she's excited for. She was born and raised and currently lives in a tiny coastal community on the southern Oregon coast. Growing up, she's enjoyed being outside as much as possible, whether it is making mud pies, exploring the beaches, mountains that surround her and her horse. Quinn says, "Natural resources are what keep my community alive, and I grew up fully immersed in it. So from friends and family that worked on the ocean, on the land, in the forest, there's no way I couldn't have had a passion to keep my surroundings beautiful here as long as I'm gone." She loves Oregon with all of her rugged beauty. She's excited for the beginning of her career and to see where it takes her. Having her son around her inspires her, and it makes her want to have an impact on the forest sector and have a hand in making it a better place for us all. From recreating, working, and educating people in it, she is forest proud. So welcome, Quinn. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have some of the similar sentiments as you. I grew up in Western Washington on the coast, and I'm so excited that you're doing your great work in Oregon. What was your first job, and do you have any good memories of it?
So my first real job was actually washing dishes at a little restaurant in the town that I grew up in. I recommend every young person to start off the very bottom washing dishes. It taught me the importance of teamwork, communication, time management, and working my butt off. I definitely learned that it's really important to work quickly.
Yeah, and so similar, Quinn, I went to work for a restaurant in my coastal town as well, and for us, it was a restaurant that people hit up back and forth from clam digging, razor clam digging to be specific. So that was just what our coastal town was, and I was a hostess and worked up to being a waitress, and I used waitressing skills to get me my gas money when I lived in college, and it was having two or three jobs was quite normal in order to be on my own feet and not rely on my parents. So kudos from, you know, starting at the very bottom and working your way up into the jobs that you're in now.
Yeah, I worked in the restaurant industry for almost 15 years, starting from washing dishes and waitressing and bartending and then line cooking and being a food expediter and working in a hospital in the dietary department. And I've really taken all those facets of everything that I've learned, and is really applicable for the forestry education that I've been doing and just working outside. It all goes hand in hand, which I didn't think it would at the beginning of my education.
Yep, I still have it on my resume as well, because it's hard work and it's something that you have to be good at. And time management is really important when you're doing tables, and food expediting is really important because, you know, it can get cold. And so you have to be really good at numbers, counting, tabletops, and getting to know all that. And yes, I'm glad that you translated it, because a lot of people expect us to go directly into forestry. And being a woman, that's not necessarily going to be the case. That's going to be really hard. And it even took me, 10 years ago, a lot of transitioning to get to be in the field and to get to work in forestry. And so it makes sense that, you know, you're able to carry those skills over. And then that goes into what you're doing now. So the next question is, what is your role now?
So I'm currently in the process of change. Like I mentioned in my biography, currently I'm a seasonal noxious weed technician at the Coquille Watershed. But we're nearing the end of the field season, and I am just super grateful for being welcomed to such an amazing and intelligent group of people. I just want to take a moment. Every team member of this organization really plays a key role in setting the standard for watershed management. And so I'm pretty proud to be a part of that, but I'm really excited for my next step as a timber cruiser, which is what, which is a job that I wanted to hopefully one day obtain after I graduated. Like, maybe one day I'll be a timber cruiser. And it, in a term of a year, it happened.
Awesome. Yeah, you work towards that really hard and getting your forest technology degree and working in the field. And I remember also having my noxious weed permits, and I never had to use them because I got positions that were in offices for forestry, and then ended up working in my watershed as a volunteer. So yes, walking in the watershed with, you know, that invasive species in your mind and understanding what needs to be where, and that's a whole discipline in and of itself. And so it's cool that you have that experience, and then you'll be going into timber cruising, which is another important experience that, you know, focuses more on the wood, but you also need to know the understory and what's going on in the woods as well.
Yeah, it's all connected. It's all relevant.
Yes, they're all connected. And absolutely, it's been something that being able to have those different jobs and go through the seasonal jobs and have a full-time position is really important. And getting your foot in the door is definitely exciting. So I'm excited for you. And then the next question, what has been your biggest accomplishment so far?
I've got a few things that I've accomplished, and I'm pretty proud of a lot. During my time at Southwestern Oregon Community College, I learned a lot about networking and developing marketing materials, and especially going to school online during a pandemic presented itself a whole slew of challenges that I'd never anticipated, especially as, you know, a single mom. I'm almost 30 now, so it's not like I could just drop everything and go live on campus. And so there was a lot of challenges there. But the forestry program that I was a part of has just, it's got so much room for opportunity. And my instructor, Tasha Livingstone, she was brilliant at translating everything into an online format and making those hard science classes like dendrology and soil science and all of those classes that you kind of learn from hands-on. She did really excellent, which I contribute to my success in completing the certificate. But one of the classes was a credit work experience class, which was an internship that normally a timber company like Rainier or just any of the local companies around us would usually bring on the students as interns. And then that's kind of how you get your foot in the door and you sometimes would get hired on. Well, during COVID, no one was willing to accept, like, to bring in anyone new because of risk of exposure. And so the college actually offered me an internship within the forestry department. And that was where I started developing marketing materials and acted as a program recruiter. I made 4 new brochures for the forestry department, trying to encourage, you know, students or potential students to enroll and consider a career in forestry. Because especially in such a small area that I live in, you know, logging's huge and the program is kind of suffering because there's just not enough numbers. And so we're really working on trying to appeal students to come on in and learn some more. And I learned how to network, and I really had to send a lot of emails. I called a lot of elementary schools and high schools looking to speak to students, anyone that might be interested in anything natural resource related. And because of all of this that I had to learn how to do by going out of my comfort zone and emailing people and calling people and getting, you know, there's a fair amount of rejection.
Yeah.
I eventually moved forward, and it, as part of another of my accomplishment, I have recently worked with Oregon State University, their forestry extension office and Oregon Department of Forestry, and created an infographic to share on social media to raise education on a really invasive pathogen that we have had in our county, and it's spreading, and it's really important to slow the spread because it's called sudden oak death. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the same pathogen that caused the Irish potato famine in the 1800s. And it's the same pathogen that's killing all of our cedars in our area. And so I really wanted to raise awareness, and I spoke with everyone and we worked together. And now I will have an infographic that will be published by OSU and ODF. And I'm just really excited that I was able to really get my foot in the door and work closely with some of the big names in the industry in Oregon.
Yeah, that's really exciting and some great work, and exactly why I created the platform I did here, because I was trying to make sure that people were educated and understanding of these things like the invasive species and very bad pathogens. And I learned about, you know, fungi at the college that I went to. And I'm so happy that you had your mentor and you were able to lean hard on someone like that. And you know, what we have to do during COVID as women being, you know, single moms is an extremely big feat. And we need a trophy just for that. And keeping your career and keeping going and going, you know, farther and farther and getting where you want to be during that time, absolutely is pioneering efforts. And I'm so excited that you've already been doing marketing. And I see that your infographic is here in your notes. So I'm definitely going to have that out there for sudden oak death, because it's really important to keep our cedars.
Awesome. I appreciate that. You know, yeah. I just wanted to, it was kind of funny. I just want to share this really quick little story. When I was interviewing for jobs, primarily dealt with just emails until someone agreed to a Zoom meeting or, you know, a socially distanced in-person meeting. And so I'd spoken to this gentleman about a potential timber cruising job. And we exchanged emails for a few months, and I kept my resume and everything. I kept it really gender neutral. I didn't throw in there that I was a woman or that, you know, that I was a single mom or anything like that. I was just trying to be really professional. Well, the day finally came where he wanted to, he was passing through my town, and he was like, "Hey, can you meet me down here for a minute?" And I was like, "Oh, absolutely." And I pull up and get out of my car, and his jaw dropped, and he was just like, "Oh, you're a woman," because I have a really gender neutral name that could go either way. And it was really funny, just his reaction, because the whole time he thought he had been talking to a man. And so it's just really interesting the challenges that's presented too.
Yes, yes. And we've all been there. I just spoke with some people from Women Owning Woodlands, and we have the same sentiment. Even 12 years ago, I said, sitting as a student in a forestry meeting with all of these champions, and it's supposed to be, you know, a male, and you're supposed to be timber cruising right out of college. It's just not a stereotype that is going to move forward. And just doing this podcast, you know, definitely is going to help people hear stories like yours that are very important, because it shouldn't matter what we identify with, you know. And there's even LGBTQ out there that matter as well. And it really, we need to be able to take people into the industry, and that includes everyone. And I'm excited that you have pushed through that and gotten through that. And I'm glad it's changed in a decade, because I think more women are being accepted. You know, we are just as smart, just as physical, just as capable. And I think that's really important. And your advocacy on social media is really awesome. So I'm wondering, what is your favorite social media platform and why?
So I'd say I'm not, you know, I don't really have a lot of the platforms, but my favorite social media platform would probably have to be Facebook. It's just so versatile because there's so many different things you can do on it. And you can share things from Facebook onto other platforms, I believe.
Yep.
And that's just kind of my primary source that I use.
And I think that creating graphics is, that's content creation. That's something that was needed, you know, when I started in the industry, and social media, spreading the word and showing, you know, efforts that we're doing in our watershed or with Oregon Women in Timber, I think is really important that you are doing that work. I'm excited to keep Facebook because it has been you know, there for everyone. And now actually it is reaching the most diverse age groups. And so if you have marketing with Instagram and Facebook, you're reaching literally almost everyone except maybe 12-year-olds, because I don't know if they're on Instagram because it's, you know, not Snapchat or TikTok, but still you're able to reach more people than you ever were able to, you know, before they existed.
Exactly. That's why I sat. So I got that when I started the infographic for the sudden oak death, it was because I had sat in on a webinar that OSU did for the pathogens, for sudden oak death and what's killing our cedars here. I should specify the sudden oak death is killing tan oaks, not just regular oaks in my area. I just wanted to make sure I get that out there in case anyone's listening. But so I sat on the webinar and they afterwards are like, if anyone wants to talk afterwards or have any input, like let us know. And I was like, hey guys, I haven't seen much of anything on Facebook about this. And you know, as a recent, you know, I'm a new landowner as well, and we have tan oaks, and, you know, I need something that's quick and easy to digest. You know, I'm scrolling, I need it to grab my attention. I'm not going to read a whole long PDF format link, you know, yeah, if I'm just scrolling on my lunch break. And they're like, perfect, sounds like a job for you. And so that's how that came into existence. And the content creation is really important too. I've been starting to work on some stuff for our Coos County chapter for Oregon Women in Timber, trying to get some new members. They just recently asked me to be one of their chair people for the social media for Oregon Women in Timber.
Yes.
And so I'm really excited to start creating content for them as well.
Yes. You're literally following in my footsteps, and I'm just cooing. I'm just like cooing over here like, oh, this is how you do it. I did that locally. You know, I was secretary of my chapters in SAF, and I created Natural Resources Club, and my mentees at my college, you know, are carrying the torch every year, and it's still going strong, more women than ever. And that is really important work. And that then stepping into social media positions and then communications chair, and that is the path that is untraditional to most people, but to us it's how you pivot and evolve and get to where you need to be, and also share the word while you're doing it. And creating these things is really important. And I think that having, you know, really good role models too, that's been really helpful for you and for me, because when people started to believe in me, I was able to believe in myself. Who are your role models now?
That was also kind of a hard question, because I've got a few like actual person role models. One of them is my forestry instructor that I had at SWOC. One of them is my friend's dad, who is a forest manager of Humboldt Redwood Company in California. I did a job shadow with him right at the beginning of my enrollment at the college, and it was really awesome because I knew him as like a friend, but it was really awesome to see kind of what I was looking at in the career that I was choosing. And he was really encouraging and informational, and it really just really set the tone for that I was doing the right thing and I was going the right direction, and that it was something really great. And then another role model that I have really is our very own Vanessa from the Coos County chapter. It was really funny, actually. My instructor in college had shared a video that Vanessa had recorded about timber cruising. And she had her dog, and she like walked through her day-to-day duties. And I was like, man, this chick is really cool. And like, I want to be like that when I grow up. And it's funny. So she really inspired me to want to be a timber cruiser. And now here we are, we're friends. We volunteer together at OWIT. You know, she's really helped me in a lot of other things. And so it's just, I think it's really good to point out that you can dream it, you can achieve it.
Yes. And that community is there for you, and you lean on it. And as a landowner, that's what I've been excited to interview the Women Owning Woodlands Network as well, because we really do need, as women, a safe place and a place that is non-judgmental on when we started our career, or if we're in timber cruising or not, or, you know, all those things that we were put into a box. It's like, no, let's take us, you know, into a different area and have a group that we can talk about anything in forestry and ask any question, and be able to have women surrounding us that have had similar stories and go, no, we can do this, and be, you know, our own cheerleaders.
Exactly.
And that's very cool that we get to do that. So I think we've already started talking about some of the issues that are facing our forest today, which she has an infographic that we'll have on the show notes about sudden oak death. But other than that, what are the major issues facing our forest today?
You know, that's such a loaded question. And I thought long and hard about this one too. And I'm going to give my personal opinion. Obviously, this is what this is for. I think climate change obviously is something huge that we're facing. It's getting warmer. I think that there, especially specifically in Oregon, I don't know, I'm not really educated anywhere else, but some of the forest management, you know, I'm not trying to point fingers, but some of the national forests, you know, that's not getting managed as well as maybe it should be, which is, you know, bringing the threat of the wildfires, the devastating wildfires we've had for the last 2 years. I really feel like there needs to be more education on research on how to manage these forests better. Private landowners seem to be doing great. There's a lot of people that are doing great, and even in the national forests, they're doing great. But I think the biggest challenge that we're facing is just maybe the lawmakers and the people in charge aren't quite as educated in the actual forest as they need to be. I think people that are in the field, boots on the ground, really, really need to have more of a voice. And I think we're all gearing up towards all of the in the boot or on the ground people really having more of an impact with their voice and getting better practices and just education out there.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's really important, and talking more about those issues and coming together and talking about them as well in the communities that you're in is really important. So I think you've already started to do some of the work anyways. So I know it's hard. It's not easy to talk about, but I think just with your education in the college, going into the noxious weeds program and learning about sudden oak death, you've started to kind of get that ball rolling and talk more about some of these issues. And some of the management plans around the United States are much different than others, depends on land ownership, like you stated, and some of the goals have, you know, what's funny, actually, I learned in forest policy about 6 years ago that some of the researchers and scientists have, and especially in, you know, Oregon State University with the forestry program and the wood programs that they have amazing research out there on how to take care of forests and how to, you know, manage them for many different goals. And that has been something that's been controversial for a little while about different agencies not doing things. But the thing is that they have their own researchers and it's in writing. I read it myself. There's many different reports talking about thinning and making sure that we have, you know, the right stand management, and it's been there. It's just kind of been ignored, and also suppressing fire for a very long time, which should never have been done. And the First Nations have definitely been ignored. I think now we know, and we've been learning from history more than ever. And I think that we're going to be able to come up with things that are going to help in the future. Then, how would you like to see forestry change?
It kind of ties into that last question for sure. Education, education, education. The more the research, the more education, the more community outreach there is, I think the path will be better to forest management, better understanding, you know, maybe if the communities actually understand what's going on out in the woods, you know, that clear cutting isn't always that bad and the loggers aren't the devil, you know, because ideas are changing now, but there's still kind of that stigma of put it out, don't cut it down. I wanted to point out that OSU, like you mentioned, their forestry program is really awesome. They're managing the Elliott State Forest here in Oregon, and it's a research forest. And I think that's a really great place to start to show members like the different, experimenting in different sections of the forest to see, you know, like what's the best way to do things and the effects and everything. And I think stuff like that is just really awesome to move forward for education and research and tying it all in together.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all connected, and we need to see, you know, what happens in that was really important for me to have the University of Washington. We called it the Pack Forest. I was thinking the probably Husky Wolf Pack or something like that is the name. But yeah, our foresters, not only did they have us go out there for field days, but it was also a place of gathering and a place of community and a place of, you know, experimental options for us to talk about different things. And I remember back when I was studying it, they were actually doing a drought tolerance experiment, which, as you know, is very important. And I don't know, you know, the results from it because I've moved on from Washington State, but I do think it's important to do those things so that we can maybe mitigate and help and manage and be ready for the future and climate change.
Exactly. I know. So like the pathogen that affects the cedars in our area, they're called the Port Orford cedar. And that's coincidentally Port Orford's where I live. And so the cedar is affected and it has mortality from the pathogen Phytophthora. I can never say it right. Okay. And they're making disease resistant Port Orford cedars. And some different people are making moves to plant those in the area so we don't lose that resource and we don't lose that beautiful part of our area. And I think that's really, really neat too, is just kind of adapting to the changes that we're facing.
Yeah, and I know you talked about your friend Vanessa. I also started to talk to her last year and interviewed her last year, and she worked for Rainier. And I also worked for Rainier in the internship that you mentioned. And if you did well, you got your foot in the door and all that. Well, I was still very undergrad. I was getting my associates. So I did not, you know, end up in a forest office after that one. But I did end up going into conservation and other areas, which I think is even more valuable because I learned how it's all connected. But Rainier, when I worked there, I was able to go to some of their seed orchards. And I will tell you, up in Port Angeles, it was in Squim, so gorgeous. And just being in that area for a day and having a mentor take me to the seed orchard. I think that also the state nursery, Webster's Nursery, is really important in Washington State for the DNR. And, you know, we're not trying to grow trees just to grow trees, but we're also trying to replant. We're trying to make sure that our silviculture programs are successful, and we're trying to make sure that we can plant trees that are going to stay alive during these times where fungi are literally taking over. Because, you know, you're talking about your specific ones. I was actually dealing with root rot a lot of the time in state parks, even had laminated root rot. And I won't name the fungus because I've been out of that for a little while. I took a fungi class in like 2012, so it's been a minute. But yeah, laminated root rot was also taking over, and it was just really eye-opening for me to see. And, you know, you ask questions, why and how can we help and those kind of things. And so I'm really happy that you've gone through all those things and you know the people that can help through those programs. And we're all connected and we all need to have all these positions that help the industry and evolve when something like that comes in your community.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So speaking of community, I'm so excited that Oregon Women in Timber is there and you guys have your own chapters. And I know Coos very well from Vanessa, and I'm super excited to hear your story. So when did you join OWIT and how has it made you successful?
So I joined OWIT early this year. It must have been like February or March, I'm thinking. I kind of joined it in hopes of networking and meeting people because of I was still in school and I was like, I need to get my foot in the door. And I think I saw it on Facebook maybe. And I was like, oh, check that out. I'm going to join. It's really cool. They offer free membership when you're a student. Which was great because as a student, you know, you don't always have a lot of extra cash. And so it really got me in. And then there's just so much opportunity for all these volunteer events that we do to help educate the community. And they've got the Talking Trees program where they go in and they, you know, they talk to students and they have all these different little programs and educational experiences for kids. The Conifer Connections is really awesome. In fact, they have the little packets.
Yes.
For the different age groups. And last year, my son was in kindergarten, and I actually ordered all the kids in his class one of the Conifer Connections packets, and it had a couple seeds you could plant. It had like a cute little coloring book with information about our forests and really just advocating for managed forests. I think it's really awesome. Volunteering for these events, when I volunteered at the fair, I met a lady who wanted me to come speak. I forget what it was exactly. She just wanted me to come speak to some students.
Yes.
Kind of like a mentor. You know, I've met a lot of great ladies. I've gotten a few numbers. It just feels really good to volunteer for something that you're passionate about. And, you know, OWIT's passion for education on forest management and then my education has really sparked my interest and passion in helping educate others. I've learned so much, and I just love that that is something that OWIT shares in common. And it's really nice to have that common ground.
Yes, I started learning about Conifer like last year, and they weren't quite ready to launch. And so I'm so happy that that program is out. And you just actually talked about some more details that I'm super excited for, because I tried my hardest when I was learning about forestry to, for like Earth Day, get seedlings from Weyerhaeuser and hand them out at my school. And, you know, that even provides with the Conifer program more exposure and will help give resources to kids. And I think a lot of people on my podcast, when I ask them about their first job, sometimes, you know, they talk about gardening or being in the soil, and, you know, that exposure early on, and the earlier the better with your son, is absolutely a good gateway to something that is healthy, a community, and people that really do care about making sure that some of the issues we see, and we talked about earlier, you know, are taken care of in the community, and that we're taking care of each other and planting trees, managing them, soil creation, making sure that the soil is good and not letting noxious weeds take over. You have done such a well-rounded program, and for being so young, I think you have all the experience to keep soaring in the industry. So I'm happy that you're with OWIT.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be there.
It's absolutely awesome. And so for the last question of the interview, what does Forest Proud mean to you personally?
Talking Forests is happy to have #ForestProud as an in-kind sponsor of the Talking Forest podcasts. What is Forest Proud? We are a community committed to making choices that keep forests as forests. We work at family businesses, forest product companies, conservation, recreation organizations, universities, and government agencies. And many of us have done so for generations. We are hikers, hunters, bikers, landowners, loggers, truck drivers, architects, researchers, foresters, students who work in and care about and share a passion for forests and forest products. The #ForestProud community is bigger than you might think. What does Forest Proud mean? It's a good question. Forest Proud means different things for different people, and that's a good thing. We all have a part to play in making choices that keep our forests as forests and help make our neighborhoods, communities, and lives better. If you live, work, or play in the forests or with forest products, you're a part of the Forest Proud community. ForestProud.org welcomes you.
You know, Forest Proud to me is, you know, being proud of your forest. Yeah. I am greatly passionate and proud of Oregon and our beautiful forests. And I love that they're sustainable, and there are so many of people just in my circle that are supported by loggers and the forestry industry. And, you know, every single person uses wood products on a daily basis. And I think it's just so awesome to be a part of a forest community. I mean, everyone's a part of a forest community, but to me, you know, if you support your community, it will support you. And to me, that's what Forest Proud is.
Yes, it's an overall achievement through North America, which is a bigger effort. And so it's kind of like peeling back the onion and, you know, going into your local community, peeling back that onion and finding OWIT, you know, peeling OWIT back and seeing Forest Proud, and that whole level of help is all there. And we're all, you know, I've definitely been with Forest Proud since the inception, and even before that, I was doing some things behind the scenes for them. So I'm so excited that, you know, they've done the in-kind sponsorship for me, and being proud of the forest is really important. And I'm so happy that Oregon even has their own Forest Proud program as well. And every program that we've talked about today matters, and they're all going to be in the show notes. So I'm so excited that I've had Quinn and learned about some of the things that she does here. And I'm so excited for my audience to learn more and hear some more stories. And Quinn's story is definitely, you know, one of those divergent paths, but it's one where she's gotten to where she wants to be. And yes, it can take a few years or more, even out of college, and getting your foot in the door into where you want to be and having that, that goal, no matter how long it takes, even if the pandemic has been hard for any of you, I think she is definitely a testimony to being in forestry and doing a great job. So is there anything else that you would like to add, Quinn, to the interview today?
I think that I took up a lot of your time. Oh, no. Thank you so much for the opportunity to let me just kind of word vomit at you.
Oh, no, that's great. This is what I do. And definitely been trying to make sure that we talk more into forestry and social media and get it out there that, you know, this is the modern way of doing things, and it doesn't matter where you come from or who you are.
Exactly.
So super excited to see your experience, and I'm excited to see you grow into your timber cruising and even more. There's even more out there than that. And I know you know that, but you've touched a little bit of everything. And so it's just super exciting, and excited to hear that you're a landowner, because there's so many resources coming out for that as well. As a woman, we have so many different options when we get handed over a piece of land that we're just like, what do we do next? And so I'm sure you've had that as well.
Yeah. It's all exciting. It's really good to be adaptable. I'm learning that for sure. Be well-rounded and adaptable. And it really opens doors that you didn't think would open for you.
Yeah. And the military, man, I've moved around so much in the past 5 years, been to 14 countries, and change is constant. It is something that I have rolled with, and I've, you know, there's been times where I had to take a break after the last OWIT interviews. I moved from Germany to North Carolina, and I wasn't on the podcast for 3 months. But you know, that's okay, because I didn't have a studio, and it was going to be really rough to do interviews on my cell phone, and I couldn't wrap my brain around it. And so that's okay, taking a break and, you know, coming back. And it's always really cool that you have a beautiful community to come back to.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for your interview today, Quinn, and I'll have everything up in the show notes. And I'm excited that you were able to talk to us today from, you know, OWIT's standpoint and also personally. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.